Let's hope so.
Good morning. Welcome to Religion 323, Women, Gender, Islam. My name is Alphonse Teichmann. Sounds foreign, is foreign. Originally from Germany. I've been in the States a long time, actually. By now, more than half my life I've spent in the US of A. Came over as an exchange student back in the day, 89, actually, before the wall came down. Left Germany, supposed to go just for 1 year to Temple University in Philadelphia. Anybody familiar with Temple? Stayed a little bit longer than planned. Toward the end of the first year, I met Chris, who is now my wife. And so we're in the 25th year of exchange and still going strong. So I had studied theology at the University of Tübingen, one of the oldest universities in Europe, for a couple of years, and then came over to Philly just, what's supposed to be just 4 years, and, you know, learn a little bit about, you know, American culture, have some fun. Hello?
I was in the wrong classroom.
Okay. I came over and had planned to just, you know, 1 year of fun, learning more about American culture, and got drawn into the religion department at Temple. Became very fascinated with the religious tradition of Islam. Prior to coming to the United States, my exposure had been rather limited and rather one-sided. I still remember when I first heard about Cat Stevens. Anybody know Cat Stevens? Convert to Islam, that I was totally appalled. I thought, you know, out of all of the religious traditions, you can pick Islam. Become a Buddhist or a Hindu, something harmless, but not, you know, this violent religious tradition. So that's kind of, you know, where I came from. And then in the first year at Temple, had eye-opening experiences with two Muslim professors, one of them actually Lebanese, born in Lebanon, a blind man, Mahmoud Ayoub, he was here a couple of years ago, who really opened my eyes when it comes to Islam and how much of stereotypes I had as an educated person. And so, you know, one of my desires then was, well, if I as a semi-educated person have all of these stereotypes, then that's probably true for others as well. And so that kind of, you know, got me pulled into studying more of Islam, and then studied for a couple of years, and at some point in time decided, well, that's actually something I may want to pursue for a living. And so finished my PhD at Temple University in 97, and then came down south for the job here at Furman. So I've been here since 97, and had a blast so far. With its ups and downs, as you all know, you're at Furman, you know, always a mixed blessing. I got married, I have two kids. Hello.
Hi.
So I have a son and a daughter. My son is actually out at ASU, Barrett Honors College. Now his second year, so he's about you all's age. His idea was anything but Furman, you know, as far away as possible from home, kind of like my, you know, he's my son, right? So, and my daughter is actually still in high school. She has another year after this to go, and then we would see where she goes. You're going to learn a whole lot more about me, I'm afraid, throughout the term. That's my story in a nutshell. My area of specialization in Islam, so I do a little bit of Christian theology from my background, Tübingen, but most of my courses are comparative religion, particularly introductory Islam, this gender course. I have another new one, Muhammad and the Quran. Any of you are more drawn into this. And then also, any of you all in the MEIS, IDM, the Middle East and Islamic Studies concentration, interdisciplinary minor. So some of you are in it already. That's something for you all. We can talk about it once the course progresses, for those of you who are interested. In the Middle East, we have this new interdisciplinary minor, although right now the minor is in somewhat choppy waters, but it's still alive. And so any of you who are interested in that area, talk to me at some point and I can explain a little bit more about that. Later on we can go into a little bit more detail on that. So much from me for now. Let me make another few observations. One of them is, and those of you who've had me in the past know this, I am bad with names. I'm a historian. I know the names of dead people. And so to help me out, what I will do is I will send around a camera, and you all can take either selfies, or you can actually give it to a buddy to take a picture of you, and I'm going to send you with that. And so I'm hopefully going to learn your names over the next couple of days. So sheet of paper, just the buttons, there's two of them. The big black one takes a picture, the other one takes a video. We want a picture, right? And we want it horizontal, not vertical. Horizontal makes it easier for me to put them all in one file. And then I'm going to have them up online. I can actually show you in a second where we're going to get back to the pictures. And just quickly go to Moodle. Let's see. So I have pictures. I think these are still from last year. Object not found. Oops. No, I don't have them any longer. Okay. Let's go back to the other pictures. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to put them up for you all to also learn each other's names. I think some of you know each other already, some of you don't. And in all likelihood, it's going to be behind a protected wall so that outside folks can't log in, right? So it's only accessible from the Furman net. So just to help us all out to learn each other's names.
Professor? Do you want our names or grades or anything? Just names.
Just names.
Okay.
Just name and name in legible fashion, and then you know put a number right next to it in what order you took them, and how you would like to be called. I know it's Southern tradition, apparently, in particular, to go by three or four different names. Right? You have the official one, and then you have the one that you actually go by. So you know, however you want to be called, that's what you put down there. Okay. All right. So that's it. On me right now, what I have in mind for today is, in the first round, I would like to know a little bit more about you all. That's one thing. The main point of today's meeting is to familiarize ourselves with the syllabus. Right off the bat, the syllabus is, in a sense, a contract between you and me. You have to make sure that you fully understand what you're getting yourselves into. So we're going to go through that in much detail, and I will suggest right off the bat that when it comes to the syllabus and you being in this class, you have three choices. Okay. Once you read the syllabus, you know, option A is everything in there you love, fantastic, you have no problems with any single stipulation in there, great. Stay in class, you happy, everybody's happy. Okay. Option B, you hate the syllabus, right? That happens on occasion. I will not be offended. There's lots of good course offerings on Furman campus. Plenty of fabulous classes to pick from. So if you feel the need to drop, I will not be offended one bit. It's going to actually make my life a little bit easier because I have less papers to grade. Right? I'm not saying that I want you out of this class. I'm just saying, you know, I won't be offended. Option C. There's something in the syllabus that really irks you and you think it ought not apply to you. If you can make good argument why a particular stipulation should not apply to you, I expect that argument in written form over the next couple of days and we can make an exception. Right? And on occasion, there are good reasons why somebody should disagree with a particular stipulation in the syllabus. So for example, I am using Turnitin.com. How many of you are familiar with Turnitin.com? It's a fantastic site from my perspective. It makes my life a whole lot easier. From your perspective, you are actually forking over certain rights of your own intellectual property to a commercial enterprise that is making money off your product. And you're not being in on the benefits, right? So if you have objections to that one, articulate them.
entry element articulation in academic setting goes through paper writing. So write me a paper, 2 pages, why you object to certain stipulations in the syllabus. We talk, we can make exceptions if you convince them. Okay, everybody on board? So that's right off the bat if you have problems with the syllabus. But at the end of the day, I'm going to go with a traditional medieval Muslim maxim that is somewhat controversial in contemporary times for good reasons, but the maxim is silence is consent, right? When you hear that in the 21st century, oh my God, right? Bad. But for the time being, I'm going to be a medievalist, I'm going to go with that, right? So if I don't hear any objections, then your silence on the syllabus indicates that you're consenting to the syllabus. Everybody on board? Everybody understand that? Okay. All right, so we're going to go to the syllabus in a second. For the time being, very quickly, to help me with the main learning process, if you would please introduce yourself in a couple of sentences, a couple of questions that you can consider. Why are you at Furman? Why are you in this particular class? What prior exposure have you had to Islam, Muslim women, what have you, through travels, through readings, through friends, through prior classes, what have you? And one fun fact you know about the religious tradition. Okay?
Thank you, sir.
Yes.
My name's Gretchen.
Okay.
I'm a senior. I'm at Furman because I just thought that it would give me a lot of opportunities to grow myself as a person, but also intellectually and spiritually and mentally. And as a senior, I can say it has, so that's great. I'm in this class because next year I'm pursuing a job in the abolition of human trafficking. So this really interests me to help me learn more about women in this culture particularly, because I definitely want to travel to work with different women, and I want to understand them better.
Okay. And you already have a job offer, or you already know where you...
I'm working through a couple of internships.
Okay.
And just kind of seeking out whichever one works best, because human trafficking is a huge issue in the South. So see where that leads me. But I don't know that much about, like, Muslim, Islam culture at all, so I'm just excited to learn.
Okay, okay. Not a single fun fact that you can come up with.
I can't really think of anything.
Okay, that's fine.
Sorry.
That's all right.
I'm Sadie, and I'm a sophomore, and I'm in this class because I'm a religion major.
Okay.
So this counts towards it. And I'm at Furman because my dad works at Washington, and he gave me a list of colleges, and he said, pick one.
What does your dad do at Washington?
He's a photographer.
Oh, okay.
So.
Okay, cool. So you have a...
And I don't really have a fun fact or any previous knowledge.
Okay. And your last name, Sadie, I can't find
it. Remington.
You.
It's under Mary.
But
I go by Sadie.
Oh, there we go. Okay. Gotcha. Great. Thank you.
I'm Karen Walker. I'm at Furman because I love the size, location, just how loved it my campus. I'm a religion major, so that's why I'm taking this class. In high school, I took a comparative religions class, so I learned about Islam on a very basic level.
Okay.
But I just want to learn more about it, and also majoring in religion. So.
Okay.
And a fun fact, I guess I know that people who practice Islam go to Mecca for a pilgrimage.
Okay. Great.
And in high school, I knew someone who went, and he told me about it, and it just sounded amazing.
Oh, cool. Male or female you met in high school who went? So, and the pilgrimage is called the Hajj, right? Okay, fun fact, very good.
My name is Sammy, I'm a junior. The reason I'm at Furman, I'm still trying to figure that one out. It's just a great school, it had everything that I wanted. The reason why I'm in this class, I live with 3 women in my household, so I have 2 sisters, and they're both very strong, independent people, and so, yeah. But no, and so I've been around Muslim culture and Islam for a while to see how the two interact. It was really interesting. Prior knowledge, I'm from Syria, so I've been traveling back and forth to Syria and here for a while. So I've been exposed to a lot of Islamic culture, and my parents taught me a little bit about Islamic culture and religion at the beginning when I was young, when I was traveling. So
okay.
That's pretty much it.
Okay.
The fun fact is more of like an observation.
Okay.
It really bothers me when people talk about negative images of Islamic people, especially because in Syria, the people that were Muslim people always were walking with stylish clothes. They might wear a hijab, but it would be like nice and colorful. So the media connotation, media image of Muslims is bothering.
One fun fact in there was already hijab. Everybody know hijab? Okay. Some type of head covering, veil, what have you. And then media image. Okay. And the negativity of that.
I'm Alex. I'm a senior. I'm majoring in global health and Asian studies.
Okay.
So my interest, I guess, is that I want to learn about other cultures, and I was on the fall 2013 India study abroad trip.
Good.
I was about Hinduism and Buddhism and Jainism and Islam.
Right.
So I just wanted to like go more in depth with that, I guess.
Okay.
I'm at Furman because I was interested in sciences and humanities. I wanted something liberal arts and to bring it all together.
Right.
My fun fact is that I learned in India that there are actually more Muslims in India than in Pakistan.
Let's see. Lots of Indian Muslims. Great.
I'm Susanna. I'm a senior philosophy and history major. And I'm at Furman because I went to UF first, and it was too big. My first class had 450 people in it. And so I came up here to visit a friend at homecoming and loved it and transferred. And I'm taking this class because my high school was very Islamophobic. And when I go home, it's very hard for me to like talk to people now that my views have changed, and so I want to learn more about it in general. I went to Morocco 2 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And had a great time, so.
Okay. Want to throw a fun fact in there?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so we learned about the five pillars of Islam.
Okay.
In my world religions class, which is not a world religions class.
Which is what?
Not really a world religions class.
Okay. It was a rather one-sided treatment of... Okay. So five pillars of Islam. How many of you have heard of the five pillars of Islam? Okay. How many of you can name them? No. Okay. A few. Well, there's a couple of students in this class. If they can't name them, I will have to fail them. They've taken classes with me prior to this. So... five pillars. Great.
Oh, I'm Jordan Tuck. I'm a junior. I'm at Furman because I wanted something really close to home, and I fell in love with the computer science department, which is one of my majors. I'm in this class because I'm also a religion major, and I have had little to none experience with Islam.
Okay. Great. Want to throw in a fun fact?
No. Not
I am Laura Reyes. It was an all-female boarding school, and so there was a lot of feminist sort of thrown into us, so I guess you could say it's feminist. And we also had very many girls who were Islamic, and so we learned a lot about their culture, and a majority of times in our chapel they would take over, and so they would teach us about like how they pray and whatnot. And we went to a mosque my freshman year, and so we got to see how like different it is, the way they have like men and women separated. And
right.
I thought that was really interesting, and I would like to end up working for either a human rights group or Vital Voices, which sort of helps women, especially political activists in the Middle East.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And a fun fact, I guess, would be how I didn't realize, well, the personal observation, I guess, was that I didn't realize how peaceful Islam is because of the way it's portrayed.
Thank you. Oh, sorry.
Okay. I'm Ariel. I'm a sophomore. I'm Ariel.
Okay.
I'm a sophomore. My last name's Blackwood.
Okay, gotcha.
I'm taking this class because I'm also a religion major in communications and Greek and Roman studies. And
what classics major?
Okay. And so I really don't know very much about the Muslim tradition. I went to a private Christian high school, and I took a class maybe similar to hers of like
comparative religions. It's actually called biblical worldview, but so it was taught from a biblical perspective.
So I've learned very basic things.
I live in a primarily Muslim neighborhood in Arkansas.
Okay. So
I think I would just like to learn more about it, not just because of my religion major, but so that I can relate better to my neighbors.
Right. Great. Want to throw in a fun fact?
Let's see. First, I was going to say the five pillars. Or first, I was going to say they go there, and then the five pillars, that's about all I know.
Okay.
I'm just going to put a check mark right next to
it. Okay, yeah, sorry.
Great.
Hi, my name is Eri Vallejo, and I'm a senior here. I am in this class because I needed an extra class to graduate, and because I'm also interested in the topic.
Okay.
I was worried about that.
And I didn't need a fourth class. I don't know much about it, so
okay. Okay. Fun fact? No?
The crown.
Let's put the crown up there.
All right.
My name is Kelsey Lindsay. I'm a senior, and I came to Furman because one of my older cousins came here, and I also went to summer camp in Brevard my whole life, so I knew I wanted to get out of Florida. Despite not being religious myself, I went to private Christian schools my whole life, so I'm trying to not take any more biblical classes because I want to learn more about other things.
Okay.
My fun fact, I'm not sure if this is correct, but in a discussion I had at God Forum last semester, a guy there that was a former Muslim said that the, I guess, mandate to wear the hijab is not actually in the Quran.
Oh, okay.
He argued with his sister to do wear the hijab about that, so I thought that was interesting.
Right.
Not in the Quran. Yes, it's a bit more complicated than that, but basically the mandate for every Muslim woman to wear the hijab, many would argue, is not in the Quran. Great.
I'm Morgan Hobbs. I'm a senior economics major and poverty studies minor. I'm at Furman, Washington, the situation. My father works at Rollins College in Florida, where I'm from. It was kind of, I wanted that feel, but not to be at Rollins where my father works. So what do you say?
Okay.
And I guess I haven't had a lot of exposure to Islamic tradition. I'm from a Catholic tradition.
Mm-hmm.
So five times prayer, and you have Allah in there as well. Great.
Since I asked the other student, what's your dad do at Rollins?
He was the director of IT.
Oh, okay.
And now he works at Wingate. Wingate
is
in Wingate, North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
It's pretty small.
Yeah. I'm not from around here. So.
Hi, I'm Elena Akampala. I'm a sophomore. I guess the reason I'm here is because my sister's from Bolivia, and I was like, oh, I really like this place. It's really cool. I'm a psych major. And I guess the reason I took this class was because, well, the whole thing kind of like, I don't really know much about it, but like, I think like he was right and somebody else said it, that like, they're all definitely radical, like Muslim, just like those radical Christians and those radical Buddhists. And so I think, you know, where anything that's radical is pretty bad, but I don't think that they don't necessarily, like, they dissolve as, like, bad, title, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And the only thing, I mean, I don't really want to say a fun fact because I feel like I'm going to get it wrong, but Sharia law, I think, is up that one.
Okay. Let's put Sharia up there. How many of you recognize the word Sharia? Okay. Cool.
I'm Rebecca Edmonds. I'm a sophomore. I guess to summarize why I came to Furman would be that it had all the things I was looking for originally, which are not what I'm pursuing further at Furman, which is why it's funny. But I'm a religion major, so that's originally why I'm in the class, and it's just a really interesting topic that I'm interested in. A fun fact, I took religion and art last semester, so I had a brief introduction to the Islamic culture, and since it was focused on art, I guess my fun fact would be calligraphy is a very high-focused thing in their form of art.
Good. Excellent.
I'm Taylor Rebell. I'm a junior. I'm in this class because I'm Asian studies, religion, and double major with a minor in women and gender. So it's triple MA.
You don't want to throw an MEIS in there and make it a quadruple.
I thought about it, but I don't have enough time.
Say anything for you.
But fun fact, last year we watched a burqa fashion show, and so I thought that was really neat, because you don't, I don't know, I just thought that was cool.
Burqa fashion show, in the class, you mean, right?
Yeah.
Burqa, everybody recognize burqa? Yep. Okay. Great.
Hi, I'm Alexis Myers, I'm a freshman. And I came to Furman because science and math is like my life. I went to a science and math boarding school, thought I wanted to be a quantum physicist at some point. I was like super intense into things. No, chemistry major. But I also kind of was done with science and math. Like, I love science and math, so I, of course, I'm going to love science and math. But I wanted to have exposure to other things, so I was like, Furman, they have a good science program, and they have other stuff. Cool. And I'm in this class because, I mean, I'm like Catholic. But I went to the God Forum, and I have talked to like some religion majors, and they talk about how the religion classes here are just really awesome. So I kind of just wanted to take one, and this one was open, so I can't. And I don't think I have a fun fact.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It might not be actually true, so it probably would be a fact for them.
Let's try.
Yeah.
No? Don't worry. Okay.
I'm Sammy. I'm a sophomore. So I came and visited, and I really liked the school, but then I also found out that they have one of their, Furman has one of the top mock trial programs, and I've been called about mock trials, so it was like, that pulled me in. And then I'm taking this class because I just find the subject material interesting.
Okay.
And my fun fact, can it just be a pet peeve of mine? Can I say pet peeve of like,
pet peeve?
Islam? Yeah.
Okay.
So when people always just assume that, or some people, not everyone, that jihad means like,
it's multi-balanced, it's just put an MB. You will learn that my first grade teacher would be very proud of me, that I'm a teacher myself now, she wouldn't be very proud of my handwriting. you will have to struggle through that. If you can't decipher something on board, you will have to interrupt me and ask me what I'm actually and I will, you know, try to pay more attention. Okay? All right. Well, welcome, everybody. So, again, it's going to take me a while. Hopefully, by midterm or something like that, I will have your names, or most of yours names, down. What helps me is, as a general practice, probably the first couple of weeks, whenever you talk, call on, or you raise your hand and I call on you, start your sentence with your name. Right? So that way, I hopefully will do. So let's go to the syllabus. Just grab a copy and pass them on. There are extras in the back, then send them over this way, because I think I'm going to do some of the okay, so quote-unquote homework for Thursday is going to be for you all to carefully read through the, that's part of your homework, there's more, carefully read through the syllabus to really make sure that you know what you're getting yourselves into. So we're going to go over, I'm going to highlight a couple of things, and then you can fly over material and ask questions now. If you're discovering something in the syllabus after class, you can always send me an email.
So some of the basics. Right, meeting time is obvious. My office, straight across in the religion department. Once you enter, take your right, second to last door on the left. That's where you find me. Once the weather turns nicer, there's a good chance that if you don't find me in my office, you may find me either one of the tables between Furman and John's, or you may find me up front right next to the quote-unquote 9/11 memorial on the benches. So you can't find me there. I don't have any office hours. I've given up on that. I have learned that whenever you have office hours, students come any time but during office hours. So two options for you if you need to get in touch with me, if it's something urgent and you want to make sure that I'm there. You send me an email. You give me a couple of suggested meeting times. So you suggest, you know, three or four different times, and then I can look at the schedule and see which one is open for me. I teach Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. So Tuesdays and Thursdays, you all, afternoon, I'm usually wide open. On Wednesdays, I teach in the afternoon. So Mondays and Fridays, I'm usually totally open. I'm usually here every day, somewhere in the neighborhood of 9 to 9:30, all the way through 3 or 4. Right? So just a general rule of thumb, you want to get in touch with me. Easiest way to do that is send me an email, tell me you would like to meet, give me a couple of suggested meeting times, or if you want to be spontaneous, drop by the office and see what I think. Okay. So as far as the course is concerned, general introduction, two topics, right? So we're going to do something on Islam, something on gender, WGS minor, so we have one, two. Okay.
I got the
minors for start. Oh, okay. So the MEIS, yeah. So, you know, we're going to do a little bit, very basic theory off the bat, right off the bat, to have some kind of methodology to work with throughout the term. I've done this for a couple of rounds now, that I'm differentiating in the course between quote-unquote regular students and advanced students. Right off the bat, anybody who has taken courses on Islam with me beforehand is going to be an advanced student, so that's at least two. Some of you may have taken courses in political science or in history that are related to the field. Now, in the introduction, I didn't hear much of that. I'm not sure. Have you taken any MEIS courses?
I've taken Modern Middle East and then Arab Israeli conflict.
Okay. See, and that probably would qualify you to be an advanced student as well, so we can probably talk after class. The difference is that the regular students at the beginning of the semester, over the next couple of weeks, will get a lot of basic information in lectures. The advanced students, I will say attendance is somewhat optional. It's up to you whether you want to show up, because there's going to be some repetition for those of you who have already done the basics of Islam. So at the beginning of the term, the advanced students are working at a more leisurely pace. At the end of the term, they're going to be working a little bit harder, because they will not just write a paper, they're going to write a longer paper, and they're going to present their findings in class, right? So that's kind of the difference between advanced and regular. And I have a short test that I'm going to give today. It's not going to be graded, it just gives me somewhat of an indication of how familiar folks are with the religious tradition. So that also helps me to kind of shoot the lectures at a level where you're not too bored, but where you're also not too stressed out. Right? Okay. So required. The test we're going to do later, probably toward the end of today's session. Required readings, four books. Has anybody already gotten the books? And there's still copies in the bookstore, I hope. Right. So four books. All of them we're going to read more or less from beginning to end. So we're going to do a fair amount of reading. In addition to that, we're going to do some reading on Moodle. I have a number of PDF files on there. ADA, very quickly, if you qualify under ADA, particularly if you have extended time for exams, talk to folks, Gina Paris, I think, ASAP, and get documentation to me. And then also make sure that you schedule exams in advance with her. And what I have in the syllabus, and what I realized after printing, There's going to be, of course, a midterm and a final, but also for regular students, there is going to be an additional early test on the basics. And so that's coming up pretty quickly, I think in 3.5 weeks or something like that. So if you qualify under ADA, make sure that you get the documentation to me and make sure that you schedule, just look at the second to last page at the tentative schedule, and the various exams are already listed there. So schedule them with the office, the student's office, and then we should be set on that. Course structure requirements, very quickly, I will take attendance. I don't have in the syllabus explicit regulations on attendance. I just expect you to be here. So usually I will send around in a sheet where you just check mark or initial after your name, and so I have a regular, record of attendance. For advanced students, early in the term, I would say I'm not going to pay too much attention to that. I assume that you don't need to be here. Of course, I will not be offended if you want to be here. But regular students, I'd say, do show up. Now, we at Furman, everybody is busy. I know that there's lots of stuff going on outside of class, and that on occasion folks have to be somewhere else, athletes and what have you, mock trial team, what have you. If you cannot be here, it would be great for me to know of that beforehand. If you have official documentation of an officially Furman-sponsored event, do let me know. If you are sick and can't make it, do let me know. And then if you don't want absences to count against you, I recommend that you write a short summary of materials missed. And for that, I have actually this small gadget here. It's a voice recorder. It's recording, unless there are technical difficulties, the entire session. So you also want to be careful what you're saying. And what we're going to do is I'm uploading these to the web, again, protected site that is not accessible outside of the Furman network. And you can download the MP3 and listen to it at your convenience. So you can jog around Furman Lake and listen to Titan and, you know, the folks in the class if you want to.
What if you walk in late and miss the sheet being passed?
Right. Then at the end of the class, you make sure that you get your hands on the sheet.
Okay.
Yeah. And general recommendation, there's lots of stereotypes about Germans that are incorrect. One of them that is correct is we like our punctuality. So, you know, the occasional late, no problem, but regular basis, not good. Just say. ADA, course structure requirement, yeah, so attendance, I'd say, you know, be here. And then there's going to be a fair amount of reading, so I expect and I hope that you do the reading beforehand. Let me just say this, in the ideal world, every student reads everything that professor assigns in good time and very carefully. Over the years, I've discovered that Furman is not the ideal world. On occasion, students don't do their reading. Now, let me say this. If people don't do their readings, everybody in the class suffers. You know, then we have these moments of awkward silence for minutes after minutes and whatnot. Not good for anybody. Nobody learns anything. So if I should get the impression that students really don't do their readings, I will become Prussian German and I will crack the whip, and that means hit you all over the head with a surprise quiz. Right? So please do your readings. I don't like doing that. On occasion, I do have to do it. So you do your readings, everybody's happy. Right? You don't do your readings, then you know we're going to have these really awkward situations in the class that everybody hates. Okay? Moodle discussion, that one I'm just thick-headed, I can't let go of this one. I've tried this for years and years and never with really great success, but I will ask you all to continue. Oftentimes we're going to find ourselves in situations where we have good class discussion going on and then the bell rings, well, we're out of time. In those situations, we can take conversations to Moodle. where you can continue. You had some brilliant insight. You didn't have time to talk about it in class. You go to Moodle, you post it there. So I will have this expectation that once a week, each and every one of you post one intelligent comment, remark, observation on Moodle. There's going to be various discussion sites appearing where you can share. So it's between that, what transpires in class. You all read different news outlets. Most of you on the internet, you find interesting links that may contribute to what we're doing in class, may give a different angle. You post that stuff. That's what I'm talking about, right? So extending discussion and conversation a little bit outside of classroom, that's what the Moodle thing is all about. So my invitation to you all to do that. Right? Second page, grading. So we have attendance and class participation, and I'm differentiating between regular and advanced students. So both of those get 10%, 5% on Moodle participation. You're going to see during the tests, for example, in addition to extending discussion, what you're also going to have there is posting, suggesting questions that should be asked on the test. There's going to be a forum for that. There's going to be glossaries, so you all help each other out, coming up with a study guide and so forth. So plenty of opportunities outside from just, you know, discussion for you all to participate in Moodle. All of that for 5%. And then here's the difference now. The regular students will take a test on the basics of Islam in the third or fourth week, I think early February. Advanced students won't. However, the meeting time before the test, actually there's 1 week that I'm going to be gone. I'm going to be at a conference in Utrecht in the Netherlands, and so that week you're going to do without me. And the Tuesday of that week, what I have in mind is that we have a review session where the advanced students meet, where everybody is in the class, and the advanced students kind of can help out regular students in you know, going over material on the basics of Islam. Advanced students on board as far as that is concerned? Okay. And then, so that's going to be that Tuesday, and that Thursday is going to be the actual test, and that's going to be administered by one of my colleagues, right? And for that one, the advanced students can take the break because they worked so hard on the Tuesday. And then we're going to have midterm exam for everybody. Going to have final exam, both of those counting for 25%. And then we're going to have a paper, that's another 25%. And then the presentation, that's now where the advanced students come in at the end of the term, that gets an extra 10%. So the 10% that the advanced ones were missing from the basics of Islam test, that's where they get those points. Everybody following? Okay. And then big project, everybody is going to do a research paper, and advanced students are going to do the presentation. So I want you immediately, right off the bat, start thinking about research projects that you want to pursue that have to do with Islam and with gender in some fashion. And further down, I'm going to give you a couple of suggested paper topics, but I encourage you all to think about what you are interested in yourselves. So if human trafficking is something you're interested in, you can think about, you know, what ways can I talk about human trafficking and Islam, a variety of ways that, you know, you probably can do that. Okay. I'm laying out here various deadlines. I know this is always tricky, that I'm pushing students very early in the term to decide on research topics, but a term flies by so fast that we actually need to be very disciplined in identifying the topic and then starting research on that. And as good as the library that we have here at Furman, it's not a library that can support every single research topic immediately with its own collection, which means that a number of you will have to go interlibrary loan. And as we all know, that can take a while. So you guys need to start deciding on topics early so you can get out of the order for the interlibrary loan books and whatnot, so we can actually end up with brilliant research papers. And then I'm giving certain guidelines as far as the bibliography is concerned, the minimum number of scholarly resources that you're supposed to be consulting, etc., etc. And then you have this long list of possible topics. So look at that, but also think about your own interests. It's very important for you all to find research topics that you like doing, that you actually should love doing, that you really should be excited about, because that's going to make yours lives easier, and it's actually making my life easier. Because at the end of the day, I have to read your stuff, and papers that were written by students who are really interested in the subject matter are a joy for me to read. It's something like 20 or 30 minutes of joy to learn something new that a student is excited about. Papers that were written under duress because somebody had to can be very painful to read. And instead of 30 minutes of joy, all of a sudden you're talking 4 hours of hell, right? So I have a vested interest in you all writing good papers, brilliant papers, makes you happy, makes me happy, right? So, again, we have to make decisions on this early. So over the next couple of weeks, what I invite you all to do is think about what you really love doing. Think about hobbies, think about films that you enjoy, think about your own major, if you can combine that in some fashion with a paper topic, and take it from there, and then just be creative and think about something that would be really fun to do. And then drop by my office, make an appointment, and then we can kind of do a little bit of brainstorming together, whether the topic is doable, how to massage the topic to make it doable. And then, at the end of the day, everybody's going to be happy, right? But be disciplined on that one and start on this ASAP, right? At this point in time, incidentally, anybody already have somewhat of an idea of what fun stuff they would like to do?
I was thinking about how women's rights between Sunni and Shia might affect the local climate in various countries.
Okay.
Especially because of Shia and Sunni majority countries, how that affects their...
Okay. And then possibly the differences between women's rights in Sunni and Shia mm-hmm. discourses.
And how that contributes to the conflict, the Syrian conflict.
Right. And so, what you want to do then is specify what oftentimes, and you all have had this experience before, minimally in your first year seminar, is that we start out with broader topics and then we realize we need to go more and more detailed. Incidentally, since you bring that up, let me also say this. When it comes to paper writing, one thing that I'm always impressed by and encourage students to do is for students who know more than one language, and everybody in this class will have studied a second language, right, at some level, if you can use other language materials, that is to say, you study French or Spanish or something like that, need not be a 500-page book. If it's just a book review of 3 pages and incorporate that into your writing process. Draw on your strengths, right? And if you have other languages that you can use them in your paper writing. Use them in your research, right? That's just this assignment. Okay. Anybody else having already somewhat of a topic?
I would say dress code.
Okay.
The way women dress and the way they choose to dress, but also, right. I guess you could throw in the controversy of France and the hijab.
Exactly, the hijab ban of a couple of years ago, and there's fascinating stuff that you can do with that. The overarching question of legislating dress, right? Legislating what you have to put on, or legislating what you can't put on, right? Very interesting questions there. So in France case, but you can extend it to other cases as well. How many of us had dress codes in our high schools? Okay, so there was some legislation going on, right? That some people told you what to put on and what not to put on. So it's kind of interesting.
Oh, I also was
and kid. Names again. So Sammy.
Oh, Lauren.
Lauren.
Kelsey.
I
was also in the Arab-Israeli conflict class last semester, and now that I'm thinking about it, I don't really think we discussed women's roles in the conflict much.
Right.
So I sort of want to. I have a vague idea of what
right.
to happen
right.
in
looking.
Women.
looking at gender or looking at prominent voices, women voices in Hanana Shadi, for example, and seeing, you know, how they and how male voices and female voices may be different.
Elena. I don't know if this would work, but you said, like, kind of running in the major type of thing. So, I mean, I guess I was wondering, like, the psychological, like, I don't know, like, how people in this culture, like, how they feel about, like, you know, versus if you brought an American, like, and, you know, someone that's, like, extremely, like, independent and, like, told them what to wear and, like, stuff like that.
The psychological aspects of that,
I don't know if that'll work.
No, and I think that you can. And then gender psychology, I'm not sure how much you've done in psychology department with gender and psychology and differentiation, right? So I can imagine, you know, brainstorm a little bit, I can imagine various ways within which one can explore it in more detail. On dress, and one other question. I'm going to get to that in a second, actually, when it comes to the dimensions of religion. There's other areas where you can explore psychological aspects and gender psychology. Yeah, great. Actually, but yeah, think about, you know, what you would have fun with. All right, so much for the papers, presentations, and then one more thing, plagiarism, academic dishonesty. It's always a painful topic to talk about. Can be a very painful experience to go through when it happens. So, what is about plagiarism? Why is plagiarism? Why is academic honesty important? Usually I do my own sermon on that, but I thought this time around you all can help me out. What is it that may be important about academic honesty in the context that you're working? Anybody have anything? What are the problems with academic dishonesty?
You're taking someone's work and not giving them credit.
Okay.
If it's just like some of their ideas, you still need to give them credit for it.
Okay.
It's not letting it snowball to whatever
you're at. But nobody is hurt in the process, right? I'm just borrowing something from somebody else, and, you know, the victimless crime.
Well, they spend a lot of time on it, so.
Okay. Okay. And names again?
Elena. And you're copying, you're not really thinking, like, for yourself.
Okay. So you're cheating yourself to a certain extent as well, right? You're not thinking for yourself.
Morgan.
Morgan?
I was going to say, it's like a good skill to have. Like, now that I'm a senior, I'm realizing, like, these types of skills are good for, like, workplace, like, honesty and all that kind of thing.
So, and honesty is not just a skill, right? Honesty is actually a more attitude, is actually a character trait, right? And character traits can be very important in the workplace. And there was another hand for you? No,
mine was already.
Okay. So basically, the moral ethical failing is, and I think Simon said that to a certain extent, it's theft, right? I mean, I'm stealing the product of somebody else, and although it may not be. There may not be a real victim. When you think about it, there are actually victims. I had a number of years ago, I had this one case of a student who had borrowed, not verbatim, but had put into his own words the outline of a major, very influential article that a friend of mine had written. Right? So this friend at this point in time was teaching in India. And he had borrowed the outline of the argument and had borrowed every single textual support from Quran and Hadith, except that he had put it in a different translation. So he goes to the original article and then takes stuff, uses a different translation, but the outline is all the same. So what I did is I actually sent the student paper to the original author and I asked the author for her reaction on this piece. And she was aghast. Right, he is a snotty-nosed, you know, spoiled brat German student who is pretending that he'd done all of the work that she had done and that actually had taken her a couple of years to put together in such a fashion to make the argument. Right? And she was just, she wasn't happy.
And so I confronted the student with that reaction from the original author to show students that it's not a victimless crime that you've committed. You've actually offended somebody and you've hurt somebody. Right? So I think we need, you know, to kind of keep that in mind. Now, what I on occasion get is that students, who knows whether they're telling the truth or not, seem to be unaware of what they've done in the first place, right? And so for that reason, I have this exercise that I do the first day of class, where you get to play the professor. And I think we may not have time to do it in class, so this is going to be part of your homework. So take a sheet and they're going around. So this is a source quote, and you may be familiar with this from the plagiarism, academic honesty, dishonesty booklet that most of you got in your freshman year. So you have a source quote, and then you have four hypothetical student papers. Oh, you've done it last year, right? Yeah. And you've done it too. Trash it. Whatever. So what I want you to do is take this home. Oh, you didn't get one? Anybody else? Everybody got one. So take this home, put your name on there, and play the professor. There's one time in the year where you actually can use the royal color of red or purple. That's reserved for academic royalty, i.e. PhDs. And look at the source code and then see, look at these hypothetical student papers A, B, C, and D, and mark them up. In what ways does student A, B, C, or D acknowledge the sources in a correct fashion or in an incorrect fashion, right? So, you know, as detailed as you can with illegible handwriting, your explanation as to how, whether and if so how, any of the students are in violation of basic rules of citation. You're all following what I'm asking you to do. So do this, bring it back on Thursday, and we're going to talk briefly about it on Thursday. Okay. So that's kind of the basic outline of the thing. So after that, you have the tentative schedule, and it is tentative. I'm sure we will deviate from the schedule. And what you have is three columns, date on the leftmost column, and then kind of topic, and then readings. And the readings in the same line, or on the same line, are for that day. So today we read the syllabus. For Thursday, you're going to have a couple of Moodle readings. Actually, there's already a first typo, one of the Moodle things ago. So there's two Moodle readings. One is Gerda Lerner, excerpts from her Origins of Patriarchy, and then the other one is Joan Waller Scott, on gender use for category, right? So the Lerner piece is pretty straightforward. The Scott piece is a little more theoretical. That'll give us something to chew on, to think about category of gender in broader terms and use some of her methodologies for the rest of the term, okay? And then, so henceforth, what you have is then the various reading assignments. Straightforward, if it says Moodle, you look on Moodle. They are not in order, so you're going to have to poke around a little bit on Moodle. What I can tell you is, if you run into problems, so there's something on the syllabus that you can't find on Moodle or on the web page, you email me ASAP so I can correct the errors. As we all know, a technology on occasion goes wrong, or that has problems, so I'm aware of that, right? And then you have these various author names, and those refer to the books that we have. So Ahmed refers to Leila Ahmed's book, and Roman numerals refer to chapters. So what is it? On Thursday the 22nd, we're going to read chapter 1 and 2 of Leila Ahmed's book. And then further down, what you're going to see is I will be gone the week February 10 and 12, and that's what we talked about earlier. So the first of those days, we're going to have this review session where the advanced students will help you all out, and you can, you know, all at that point in time, I hope that we already have produced some of the glossary on Moodle with terms that you can think about and already potential essay questions for the exam. And then the advanced students can help you think about that and help you out a little bit to review for the exam. And then the exam for regular students is going to be on the 12th. And then I'm going to be hopefully back by the 17th. Okay, so that's the outline of the schedule. I think everything is in there. And again, as I said, it's tentative, so it may change. Okay. So that's the syllabus. Now, questions that you all have, observations, comments. As I said at the beginning, we're not done. I think we're meeting about the 4:15, is that correct? Yeah. So we still have 15 minutes. So, as I said at the beginning, you have three options now. One of them is you love everything in the syllabus, you stay quiet, silence is consent, we're in good shape. Option B, you hate it, my feelings won't be hurt one bit, you find another class. And option C, if there's particular stipulations that you're unhappy with, tell me why in a short paper. Okay? So if you want to take option C, I would say do that soon. I would say by Thursday, I need to hear from you. Otherwise, I assume that we're in good shape. Okay? Great. So much on the syllabus. Not a single question. Everybody happy? And names?
Alexis. The test dates a little more solidified?
Say again.
Are the test dates more solidified, not as tentative?
The test dates are pretty solidified, okay. I don't think I've ever changed test dates. Okay. So you can write those in pen, you can actually write them in stone. In my 17 years at Furman, I don't think I've ever changed test dates. Except for the surprise quizzes, which I don't announce. Yeah. Okay, other questions?
My name's Gretchen.
Gretchen.
And so for the paper, is that just like a full semester long paper that we're working on? And bit by bit, it's going to be due to you and working with you through it, and then at the end of the semester we're going to pass it in?
Right. You do most of the work yourself, so at the beginning, you will drop by at some point in my office. We can talk a little bit about it, and then you work at it. There is not any draft stages in between. What I'm very open to and encourage students to do is once you have a draft and you want to talk about it, drop by and we can go over stuff, right? But it's not, what I do in my first year seminar, for example, we have various draft stages and go through it one by one. What I have here is, in order to push you to develop, right, I have the initial date on just identifying a title, and then the second date, which point in time you have a bibliography and an abstract, so I know what you're doing. And I can troubleshoot if the bibliography doesn't meet the abstract, then I would go in, but usually that doesn't happen. And then sometimes I have students come by who are struggling, asking for additional resources, or we discuss where the paper is going and all that. Does that answer the question somewhat?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
But my urging, strong encouragement to everybody: talk to me. Mm-hmm. Right. So I'm not much of a hand holder in that I make you constantly come to my office. But the opportunity definitely is there, but the initiative ought to come from you. And paper writing is, how many of you have written, 3 papers of 8 pages or more so far? So we all know how it goes. And I think that most of us know that it's a struggle, right? Since I have time and we may get to that in a minute, let me say how I see a paper. And most of you probably have heard something similar from other professors. The academic paper you can imagine as your own contribution, your voice at a table where a particular conversation is taking place. Let's put it like this. Academic discourses you can compare to tables in the dining hall, right? So there's folks sitting and they are chatting about something. And every single topic that you come up with in this class, I guarantee you, you're not the first person who has thought about that. There have been other people who have thought about it and in all likelihood written about it, right? So if you want to join in on a conversation in the dining room, the first thing you need to do is listen, right? So you're sitting down at the table and you start to listen, which is you're doing your reading, right? So you read what other people have said on this particular topic to familiarize yourself with the vocab, familiarize yourself with what already has been thought about and what already has been said. And you do a lot of listening. That is to say, in all likelihood, my experience is when you write a paper, about 90% of materials that you read don't make it into the paper. They are just familiarizing yourself with the field. And there's about 10% that actually ends up in the paper in some fashion. So there's going to be a lot of listening, i.e. a lot of reading that you all have to be doing. And then once you listen carefully, at some point in that conversation, you're going to find something where your contribution actually would make a difference, right? So either after listening for a while, you realize, oh, there's this one idiot who has no idea what they're talking about, or these two folks actually are thinking the same thing, but they are not saying the same thing, or this particular person has overlooked this fact, et cetera, right? And at that point in time, you have a paper, right? That's your own contribution now to the conversation, right? And so I'm looking for that. So I'm looking for some type of originality, not a PhD thesis, something earth-shattering new, but your own critical acumen, that is to say, your own original insight into a particular situation, a particular question. Right? And so once you have that, that is, you have a thesis. Right? And then having a thesis is a good thing, but having a thesis without support is not so good. Right? So what I'm looking for is a thesis, I'm looking for evidence to support your thesis, and I'm looking for the evidence to support your thesis being produced and presented in an organized, accessible fashion. Later in the term, I think I can share with you, I'm experimenting right now with a couple of grading schemes or, you know, criteria, what I'm looking for. But I can tell you at this point in time already, I'm looking for some type of originality. It doesn't have to be earth-shattering. But something of your own insight, not just summarizing what another idiot has said, but you actually contributing in some fashion to discourse. I'm looking for, so, you know, that means an original thesis. And then I'm looking for you actually considering the evidence that supports your thesis, ideally not one-sidedly, that is to say you're also aware of countervailing evidence that would actually not support your point. Medieval times, the scholastics were brilliant folks in that whenever they had an opinion, not only were they able to articulate their opinion in a convincing fashion, but oftentimes they were better at articulating the opponent's position than the opponents themselves. Right? So if you can articulate the opponent's position better than the opponent, him or herself, you won the debate, right? So that's kind of what I'm looking for. Does that make some sense to you? Does that make sense to others? So, you know, think about it, and if you have questions on that, again, you know, drop them off and say in chat. Okay. In the last 7 minutes that we have, very quickly. Oh, first of all, a picture. This thing just died on me, and no, it didn't. But that died on me, didn't it? To exit the system and then turn it back on. Is there a green light coming on there? And it's making noise. Okay. Let's see whether I can find this. Okay. So very quickly on the picture that we started with. What's the difference? And names.
Jordan. There are two women in the top one, but they do not show up in
the top. Oh, okay. And one of the two women was who?
Angela Merkel.
Germany.
So, you see Angie over here, right? And Angie is gone down there. Anybody recognize the picture? And your name. You had your hand raised. Do you recognize?
Yeah. Kelsey, and it's a photo from the Solidarity March in France. And I believe it was yesterday. And then there was a Orthodox Jewish publication that published the second photo and removed the world leaders.
When did you see that?
This morning when I was reading the news.
Oh, okay. So you're on to me, yes.
And you read it where? CNN or?
I believe it was a foreign news article, but I can look it up on my phone, but okay. I don't remember the name of the public.
And anybody else came across that story, that actually this ultra-Orthodox Jewish newspaper photoshopped women out of the picture? Why may somebody want to photoshop women out of pictures? Okay, that's maybe part of it. You have your hand raised?
No.
Okay. So something to think about, right? From a religious perspective, why may we not want women in public, etc., etc.? You could obviously ask, why may somebody want to Photoshop people into the picture? What the State Department, U.S. State Department, would love to Photoshop who into the picture? The president, right? He made a mistake. We should have sent him over there. Of course, the other one is, some of you may also have caught that story. This looks like, you know, they are marching up front, right? First of all, the image itself for an American audience is evoking or reminiscent of what? Where have we seen folks marching arm in arm and hand in hand before?
Was that civil rights movement?
Civil rights movement. Right, so that kind of same idea, you know, shoulder to shoulder, we stand. So that is evoked in there. And then, of course, you know, the question of missed opportunity for the Americans not to show solidarity, and then the question of showmanship in there. Anybody? So it looks from here as if these folks are leading a huge crowd, right? Million plus people marching in Paris. Anybody know the real story behind that? Is it a million folks marching behind? What's the real story?
Wasn't it just like this photo was separate from where the other huge march was going on, and they just took it as
It's it. Not that it doesn't evoke all of those things, right? Solidarity, and not that it is powerful in that, but if you are led to believe that this is the beginning of a long march, hundreds of thousands of people squeezed into this particular street. No, this is a side street. When you see shots taken from above, you see that there's a handful of people here. There's 50, 60 people, right? Of course, it was done for security reasons. You have some of the, you know, major political figureheads in Paris, and Paris, of course, at this point in time, still somewhat on edge. You don't want to expose them to all kinds of security threats. Right? But, you know, the power of image, there's a number of different things going on. Right? So then that's just as one thinking exercise. In the last 2 or 3 minutes that we have, the reason I asked you about fun facts, as far as religion is concerned, we're going to get back to that, I think, on Thursday, is the question of the multidimensionality of religion. I know we have a couple of religion majors in this class. How many of you have heard of the seven dimensions of religion? Okay, so a few of us have heard of that. Ordinarily, when we think about religion in a Western context, in particular in a Western Protestant context, we think about religion as somewhat one, two-dimensional. Religion is primarily about belief. It's about faith. It's about it's really very important what we believe, what we do, how we live our lives, and so forth are secondary to that, right? And that's a particularly Western perception of religion. And what Seven Dimensions, in your smartest,
one of the first thinkers in this regard, comes up with is to point out, well, actually, belief is one aspect of religion, but there's a lot of other stuff going on in religion that you don't pay attention to, or that you would neglect, that you would discard if you one-sidedly only focus on the doctrine, on the belief aspect, right? And so what we have here is already a little bit of that smorgasbord of different dimensions that find expression in religious tradition, right? So we have Hajj as a ritual, the five pillars on the ritual side. We have Sharia. Religions oftentimes are also about law, right? In Judaism, in certain types of Christianity, etc., etc. We have a textual dimension, right? Religions are also about stories that we tell each other. Religions, faith, of course, Allah, God. The question is, this God, what similarities and differences does he have to other gods? We can ask that question. The art aspect, calligraphy, right? The material dimension, that religion often is about stuff as well, right? And so some of these dimensions then are more important for our purposes, given that we focus on gender. And the experimental emotional, for example, the psychology of dress, you can also talk about the psychology of religious experience. Hajj, for example, how do women experience pilgrimage to Mecca different from men? Those kinds of things you can think about, right? The ethical and legal and the social institutional dimensions, very important when it comes to ritual. So we're going to gender, sorry. So now we have gone over time. That's very un-German of me. See you all on Thursday. So read the syllabus and let me know if you have questions. And do your homework. See you on Thursday.